Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
How far would you go to save Bakugo from the League of Villains? We're going to ask that question and many more today on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the priests of the geeks. I'm your host, Christian Ashley. I am joined, of course, by, she's no TJ, but it's not her fault. She's still pretty dang great. Elizabeth Pangalang and Clyde, how's it going, Pang?
Pretty well. Why do we always hype up TJ even when he's not here? I don't understand.
Because he doesn't listen to the show, and it's funny to me. That we sing his praises all this time and he will never once hear it.
That's so fun. But I'm well. I'm glad to not be TJ, actually. My husband is glad as well for me to not be TJ.
Yeah. Well, I think your husband would prefer it that way, yes.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, Pang, what have you been geeking out on recently?
I said it the last episode I did, but it's just what's been consuming me because I've been procrastinating studying. So COD, Cold Wars. I just went full in and my studies have suffered.
Well, you can either grind either one or the other, you know, and studies sometimes just have to suffer for fun.
Well, or just because life got too overwhelming. And so I try to have a distraction.
Yeah, I totally get that. I just finished airing not too long ago, Brave Bang, Brave Arn, which was our mecha show of the last anime core, and I had a blast. It's definitely, I thought it was originally part of the Brave series, but no, it's inspired by them. It's fun, high octane, hot-blooded anime mecha action, and that's everything I want in the world. So there's that. But today we're gonna be going into My Hero Academia once more, this time going into the Hideout Raid arc, where after the events of the last arc, Bakugo was kidnapped by the League of Villains, and now we are forced in a situation of what are we going to do to bring him back. So Pang, would you like to help me give like an overview of what's happening here?
Yeah, so we just exited the forest, and that's when they got Bakugo and those little bee things, and we are trying to figure out where Bakugo is. Like, so it's all hands on deck because this is a political nightmare as well. Because this is a hero student getting kidnapped by villains where all these adult professional heroes are around. So really, this is a big political statement right now. Parents and the society are losing trust in the heroes and trust in UA. And so everyone, it's like all the top guns on deck. You see Best Genius on the scene. Everyone, Mount Lady, like a lot. Do we get introduced to a lot of like Endeavor, smaller heroes? Yeah, Endeavor's
on the Gang Orca, I think, shows up for the first time.
Mm-hmm. So this is where we see a lot of like the heroes, and we kind of see a little hierarchy of the system too, like who's number one, two, three. And so you see the top dogs coming in. And of course, they want the kids to stay out. Let the adults handle it. You guys are not trained. You guys barely can handle your quirks. Looking at you, Midoriya. Of course, they're not going to do that. And so you have kind of like two sides of the coins of the adults trying to figure out where Bakugo is. And then you have the students trying to figure out what they can do. And you have people like Momo, who's class rep and wants to be goody two shoes. But yeah. Other people who have the guilt, pretty much survivor guilt. I was right next to Bakugo and I couldn't do anything. So they're just trying to find him. And then you have Bakugo a little bit. You see glimpses of him chilling out with the League of Villains. Not really chilling. He is very much a captive at this point.
Being very much himself.
Yes. And we are still, from the audience, wondering, we don't know at this point, is he going to turn or not? Like, that's kind of like everyone. Yeah. Everyone's kind of holding their breath. Like, what's going to happen?
Oh, yeah. This arc is honestly one of my favorites. It's not my favorite. That would be, you know, whatever the rescue area arc is actually called. I think it's a Shie Hatsukai. But we get a lot going on here. We get to see how the adult superheroes actually engage in the world, how they do things. We get to have the kids who shouldn't be there, but still they feel that obligation to go and rescue their classmate. And for some of them, their friend. I have Momo thinking tactically to put a device so that they can track someone down, like in the heat of the moment. That is pretty dang smart on her part. And we get, you know, is Bakugo going to end up becoming a villain? Well, Bakugo answers that question once and for all by saying no, he idolizes All Might. There's no way he's going to join these filthy League of Villain losers because they're not All Might. And we get introduced to All for One for the first time after being hyped up. It's like, oh, Shigaraki serves this master. Who's this master? Oh, that's why he serves him. He's one of the most, if not the most powerful person on the planet, with the ability to steal and then utilize other people's quirks, which leads to the brawl between him and All Might as they manage to get Bakugo out of there. You know, Midoriya and his guys working to get Bakugo away, while at the same time the adult superheroes are fighting. And we get the big smackdown between All for One and All Might, where All Might loses his powers. Not totally, but for the most part, he's been taken out of the equation.
Yeah, he's retired now. He can still do a facade of walking around, but he's weak now. He can't hold his hero form for only a couple seconds.
Yeah. And it comes to the point that, yeah, we prevented All for One from getting Bakugo and from killing a bunch of the other heroes, but he did manage to steal Ragdoll's quirk, which means that he's able to search people now from wherever they are. But at the same time, it's okay, because as All Might turns to the cameras that are watching this fight and says, now it's your turn, the world thinks, oh, he's talking about the villains, but Deku knows he's talking about me.
But worst of all, Bakugo looks at Deku during that time, and Bakugo knows he's talking about Deku as well. So just imagine like that jealousy, because you idolize being someone so much, and then you see someone who you thought was scum beneath your toes pretty much getting what you've always craved, which is your hero's recognition.
Yes, which obviously sets up for arcs that are going on later on in the show. But also, in like the smaller part of this arc is after that big fight, there is the part where UA, the hero organization training them, is going to have them actually be on campus. But they got to get parental approval of that. So we get to meet some of the kids' families. And like, it's not the biggest part of the arc, but it's still part of it. So I want to focus on it a little bit. So we have All Might like going down on his hands and knees, full bowing in front of Deku's mom, Inko, I think her name is, and just begging for him to be able to come to school. And we have, you know, Bakugo's parents meeting them for the first time. And we see, well, he definitely takes after his mom. It's just a lot of fun. It's such a cool arc. So paying with all that in mind, now we've, you know, given an overview, not everything that's happened here, like, are there any standout moments for you that you want to discuss further? We'll get the characters after that.
I kind of alluded to it earlier, just kind of that crushing feeling of seeing someone get what you always wanted. I see it like we have to deal with similar situations in our day-to-day lives. Like, one of your friends might get that promotion you wanted, that you felt like you yourself was better qualified for, and you prepared your whole entire life for this promotion, and you hear about it, see it, maybe experienced it yourself. Your friend gets what you want. Or I'm kind of going through that season right now of my husband and I, we've been trying to have a kid for like a year now, and we've been trying hard, like, and going to doctors and whatnot, and like seeing friends get pregnant, and it's like, it's that bittersweet, like, I'm so happy. Like, you know, you got getting pregnant now, I understand how much of a miracle it goes. Like, I understood the science. Now I understand, like, the God aspect of it. And so to see people get what you want and you desire, it's hard.
Well, most definitely. The idea of like, I shouldn't feel angry or upset because they're being blessed with something immense. Mm-hmm. But no, I also wanted that.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to be a part of that.
I want to be the number one hero. That was his Bakugo's dream. And so, and we have to think of the mindset. This is a high schooler too. So he does not have the most emotional maturity to kind of cope with that. And we do kind of see him break down and come, you know, down the road for his feelings. So I just really love the human aspect in that interaction.
Oh yeah. Good point. Yeah. For me, obviously it's the biggest moment is to offer one All Might fight in here. We finally meet the guy who, hey, we've heard made All Might the way he is now, the way he's only able to be in this mode for a couple minutes at a time instead of always being hulked out is because of this All For One guy who gave him that injury. And to see the two of them fight and have the realization. This is when he reveals that Shigaraki was Nana's grandson, right?
In this something fight. Like that. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And like, for All Might, like Nana was like the person he looked up to, the person who passed on all one for all to him, and to see her legacy messed up and screwed up in this fashion really heightens the fight between the two of them, where we get to the United States of Smash and the fake out for off one thing, it is coming out one way, but it's actually in the other arm, and he manages to take him down to where he can be in prison. Now, sure, he probably have just been shot dead after that. Yeah, more than likely, yes, given who we're dealing with, but children's manga. Not going to be worried too much about that. But it's still that moment of All Might knowing he's going to give up everything, puts everything he has into that punch and manages to win, raises his hand in the fashion he always does, and then tells that, you know, you're next. Sending off the torch to Midoriya. I love that scene too much. It's one of my favorite fights in fiction.
It's pretty powerful, really. I think I got a little misty-eyed doing that as well.
Oh, yeah. I won't lie. I started crying around there. It's like, man, as I've grown up, I've learned it's okay. I used to be one of those people. You can only cry over things that are real.
Oh, no, I sobbed like a baby for the One Piece death.
Ooh.
Like yeah. There's been no death fictional that's gotten me like that one.
Yeah, we're still a couple episodes away from covering that one. That's going to be a
brutal one. That's why I didn't say who, but we all know.
Yes. Oh, yes. That used to be a meme. Nobody dies in One Piece until that day. But for my hero, other moments here, I love. It's a very small scene, but it's when All For One shows up and he starts clowning on the other heroes, and he goes at the best genist who is fighting against him, and he like praises him, and he also says, "Hey, I could steal your quirk, but that's too much work." So really, in a way, it's not a diss. It's like him giving like some flattery. It's like, you worked hard enough on this quirk to control thread, to control fabric, that I don't want to waste my time doing it, but I still appreciate you being able to do it. It's that weird kind of baddie flattery in a sense.
Yeah. And that shows you, he gets pummeled, yes. Right? Like I see you pretty much. He's out of commission for a while.
It's a while before he shows back up on the scene. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Other than that, that'd be more character stuff. How about character moments that stand out for you here?
I'm trying to think. I don't think any really students stood out to me that I'm thinking about. I don't think anyone was like, ooh, you know, no student actually shined besides Midoriya and Bakugo, you know, because like we talked about that moment, but I'm trying to think if they did anything fun, and I don't think so. I just love Bakugo, like being tied up, and they really tried to turn, they really thought they were going to turn him. And I really thought they were going to turn him too. Like that. Like, I just love that we did not know, you know, how it went. Like, either it kept us on the edge of the seat. Well written.
Even if you think, no, there's no way. There's that doubt in your mind. Could he become our Sasuke for this series and end up joining the League of Villains?
Yeah. Could he have been like a double agent and, you know, infiltrated it? That could have happened.
I will say, once again, it's a smaller scene, but Ida, when they're all... It's Izuku, goodness gracious, Kirishima, Momo, and Todoroki are all deciding they're going to go try and track down Bakugo. He's realized what they're going to do. And because of the actions that he did in the last couple arcs where he went out on his own, did his own vigilante thing because of his revenge, he gets angry at them, but he doesn't condemn them because he gets it. He understands, okay, I know why you're doing this, so I'm going to accompany you, knowing the plan is that we're not going to actively engage with any of the villains. That's a good character moment for him in that he has learned where to go, but also how to slow things down a bit and not be so judgmental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. And then, gosh, it was just such a, so much happened, but it's so hard to explain it all because it was just so quick too. There was no drawn out fight scenes. There was no drawn out like over planning. It went by very like quickly, which I appreciated because I hate when a fight scene takes 20 episodes.
As you continue on through your Dragon Ball watch.
Yeah, I am. And right now I'm in a filler area that I think, well, episode like 7 of a filler. And I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah. There's another smaller scene. It's when you kind of realize just how well Deku knows Bakugo, in that if Deku is the one who reaches out his hand to Bakugo, he's not going to reach out back. But because he's watched him and Kirishima become friends, the plan is to have that happen instead.
True. That does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that shows a tactical mind, but it also shows a very human side. It's like he is more empathetic to Bakugo's feelings, that he doesn't force a situation that won't make it work.
And really, the kids strategizing, as we know in most anime and whatnot, they're more efficient than adults. I mean, just look at Harry Potter. Like those three kiddos, they kept on saving the world over and over again. And the adult wizards, what, where you at? Same scenario here, which makes it relatable because it is kind of geared towards more of the younger audience. But I mean, that's just bad booties. I appreciate those kiddos.
Yeah, they proved their stripes here. We'll get into later on, like, is this something they should have done in a second? But I mean, for now, let's go back to Bakugo.
Okay.
I mean, do you think that Bakugo has the potential to be a villain?
Oh, yeah.
Because the whole thing, the reason the League of Villains captured in the first place is because they think, based on how he reacted in the sports festival arc, where he acted like, even though he won, it was just Mad Dog who had to be chained up, you know, as the awards were being given out, that, oh, there's a fiery spirit inside of him that may lead him to villainy. So they think, maybe we should add him. So go ahead, Bang.
Yeah, so I feel the reason why I can see him as a villain is, yes, he wants to be the number one hero and he wants to be like All Might, but he wants to do it, I feel, for the power and the self-satisfaction and not because I truly care for people. So his power can get him to number one, but his character will not be make him beloved by the people, if you will, or his character doesn't seem like he wants to save people. You know, like it's all the he has all the power, but none of the heart. So I feel with the League of Villains, that could easily be changed to, oh, I can be the most powerful villain now. And like, you know, his goal can easily shift because he doesn't have the heart to protect the people.
Well said. I think it's one of those things where it could have path because I agree. He is one of those people who is not in it always for the right reasons. I mean, he's kind of Endeavor, that's one of the ways they do end up becoming foils to one another as the show continues, is Endeavor wanted to be the very best, be the number one hero, but he kept always being in the shadow of All Might. He was saving people. He was doing good things for his own glory, for people to look at him. And Bakugo kind of has similar aspects in there as well. Like, he's doing this to be the top dog. He's doing this. Yes, he's going to save people. He's going to help people. And I do think there is a spirit inside of him that wants to help them. But ultimately, at this point in his life, it's about him. It's about how he looks, which you've seen between him and his relationship with Deku this whole time, of him always being the top dog and how that affected his relationship with Izuku to the point where, if you remember very early on, he told him to kill himself.
Not very heroic.
not very heroic at all. But do I honestly believe he is ever going to become a villain? No. I just think there's aspects of his personality he needs to work on. But I even though there was a twinge of doubt in my mind when, you know, he was in the League of Villains and they're, you know, trying to woo him over to their side and say, there's no way he's going to say yes. He's going to fight them. And what does he do? The moment they throw down and say, hey, we want you to join us, he doesn't flinch. He goes out and attacks them. Like, doesn't even think, well, maybe I could act like a double agent. Maybe I could just lie to them. No, Bakugo, that's just not who he is as a person. He's impetuous. He's hot-headed. He's going to blow them up. How dare you kidnap me? I am a hero.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to support our show, please consider joining our Patreon, where you get live access to our YouTube exclusives, including our comic book catch-up, manga mustard, drinks with Tejas, and our companion series that we do each year with our annual theme. You can also get exclusive merch, including t-shirts, handbags, a coffee mug, and a long sleeve shirt. We also have available bonus extra questions at the end of most of our podcast episodes. You get access to exclusive Discord channels, discounts on our store, access to any future online D&D campaigns. You get to vote on topics for some of our episodes. You can easily access all of the Patreon content right through Spotify now. So super easy. Go to our Spotify page at the top. It's going to say exclusive content for subscribers. If you're a patron, hit that button. You get all of our bonus content right there on Spotify, right with your regular feed. And of course, you get the satisfaction of knowing you helped a podcast in need. Our overhead includes editing software, marketing equipment, recording software, and a lot more. And there's a lot that goes into keeping the lights on here. And we really appreciate all of our patron subscribers for helping the show happen.
So moving on from there, unless there's something else you want to add.
Nope, I agree with what you just said.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. So early on in this arc, we had the argument as, you know, Deku is in the hospital, you know, being treated for his wounds because once again, he's exerted his power too much in a fight with Muscular and so on and so forth, and trying to rescue Bakugo and failing in that aspect, but managing to save Tokoyami. So there's one thing they were able to do there. The students have a meeting essentially there where there are some who want to go and save Bakugo, and there's others who insist that they should allow the adults to handle it because, hey, they are still heroes in training. They don't have their licenses. So if they go out and do this, they're acting as vigilantes. They're not doing what they're training to do. Mm-hmm. So we have people like Momo and Shoto and Deku who are like, hey, we should be out there. We need to get Bakugo. Kirishima's like, I need to get my friend. And then you have people like Sue, who in a very blunt way said, look, that is not how we're supposed to do things. And you kind of even acting like villains in that regard. So in your opinion, Peng, who's right in this situation, or is anyone right?
I feel like there's no one right in this situation. I'm such a rule follower. But once again, your position determines your perspective. And your perspective determines a lot of your actions. So if I didn't know Bakugo straight from anything, I'll be like, why are you guys breaking the rules? Like, no, just stay here. But as Midoriya and Kirishima, like, that, nothing can stop them. So they see justice in their eyes, and they are kind of on that vigilante side. But I mean, it worked out in the end. I mean, they say, like, it's the same scenario when the hero killer came. On paper, they did nothing. They were just there because they weren't allowed to do anything. You know what I mean? We needed them, obviously, looking on the other side. But I probably would, if I knew the situation and I knew someone needed my help, I would do it. But I mean, once again, if you don't know anyone, why? I'd be like, no, we gotta stay by the rules. But I wouldn't have the passion or the perspective of I have to save my friend.
Yeah. For me in this scenario, this is assuming I have superpowers. I am in this organization. I can act in that way. I am on everyone's side here in different aspects because, hey, there are trained superhero adults who've got the same things we've done, but have more experience. They should be able to track him down. They should be able to get it done. But I also understand kids don't think that far ahead. Mm-hmm. They're thinking, oh no, our friend is kidnapped. There's this vague possibility of other people doing it and bringing him back. But what if we did it ourselves? Because these are very capable people. They know what they're doing. They've had experience fighting other villains. They can go out there and do it. And they know, thanks to Momo, exactly where Bakugo is. So they can do something about it. And, you know, that old Spider-Man adage, you know, with great power, there must also come great responsibility. So if you have the ability to do something and you don't do it, that shows weakness and fear and timidity to me. If you're not capable of doing it, I'm not going to get angry with you not doing it. But for me, if I am in that scenario and I have the capability of doing it and I have, there is nothing like, and I know exactly as much information as they do, which is they don't know about the plan to rescue Bakugo. I'm going out and doing what they did. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Sue is right. They are children. This is not responsibility in the eyes of the hero world, because they're just supposed to be there learning. It's not their fault that one of their classmates got taken by a villain. Mm-hmm. They need to stay. They need to listen to the rules. They need to abide by it, understand her perspective, which is why later on when she does have that scene where she kind of reconciles with everyone and apologizes for how she said it, they understand where she was coming from, so they don't mess with her that much. They just bring her back into the fold.
Makes sense. Yeah. Which, well, Sue, because she knew the people, you know. So I feel like if I was in Sue's position, I would have joined the classmates in the crowds. But I mean, there's a reason why we don't see Class B on the battlefield. They don't have the skin in the game.
Yeah. Which this kind of whole thing brings up one of the aspects of My Hero Academia as opposed to other superhero worlds out there is that every hero who is out there is registered. They are officially by the government. They've proven they've had the classes to be able to prepare for this. They've done the training. They've done all the work studies.
They have the licensing.
Yeah. Like they are official heroes approved by governmental authority. But in other cases, in most other hero worlds, that's not the case. It's vigilantism is kind of the thing what people do. Like Marvel did have a civil war a couple decades ago now. That's how old we are now. Is, you know, the conflict of should heroes register? Should heroes have oversight over them? Or should just be autonomous beings doing their job? And in here, that question is brought up. Like, in your opinion, Peng, if heroes existed, would you push for there to be a registration system so we knew exactly who they were, or would you prefer vigilantism?
I would prefer, but I'm a systems gal. I would prefer some kind of balance or hierarchy, some kind of council, if you will, because I feel no one should have that much power. And I alluded to it when we talked about the Quiet on Set episode. And you see it even in pastors and different leaders. In any scenario, once you have so much power, something gets to your head a lot of the times. And you just start to see, like, how much can I get away with? Or you just start to, it's just crazy. Like the other day, like even a police officer has a lot of flack right now because he arrested a teenage boy away, pretty much arrested him in a pretzel position. And yes, the boy probably deserved to get arrested, but why are you pushing the line, you know? And so he is now up to be reviewed, which is good. It's a checks and a balance. Like, did you need to use this much force? Let's review it. And if we need to have corrective actions, someone will corrective action. But if it's just vigilantes, what is the corrective action of it? What is the protocol? Because you'll have the Incredibles type moment where, yes, they call it the bank robber, but they just did millions and millions of dollars worth of damage. And so they don't really think about the other people. And so there needs to be checks and balances. Well, also, I mean, you want them to get paid too. Like if it was, I think of like also.
Ideally, yes.
Yeah. I mean, they do be saving lives. We need them.
Yeah. In that same way, you know, they'll, firefighters, police officers, you know, EMS, they're all paid for those services. There should be a system in place. And if that were to be a thing for heroes to be paid. But for me, growing up, you know, you're more Marvel and DC kind of fandoms where for the most part, there's not a lot of oversight. And the ideal is that if people had these abilities, they're using it for the betterment of others. They're using it to help other people. So that's why, you know, most of the time there are some comics where it does prop up, you know, when your Guy Ritchies show up in the Avengers, where they have direct government oversight. But at the same time, no one's doing that over the X-Men. No one's doing that over Spider-Man or Daredevil or so on and so forth, because it kind of, for what their stories they're trying to tell, kind of weakens them. Spider-Man is better on his own for autonomy because we know Peter Parker is the kind of person who's always going to do the right thing, who's always going to be looking after someone. Yeah, collateral damage is going to happen in those fights, but I'd rather that collateral damage happen if it means the Green Goblin isn't killing people or what have you. But at that same time, you bring up very valid points. Who watches the Watchmen? That's one reason why the Watchmen, when that was created, asked that question, because sometimes you have people with these powers or these people with these abilities or training aren't always acting heroically. So you need to be able to go, okay, well, who can we trust? Who are we going to send out into the field? And I get it. I think the idealistic part of me says, no, just let them be vigilantes. They can get the job done. But I think if this actually existed in the world, as much as it pains me to say this, I would be in favor of a registration system because, hey, like, we need to know who this guy is, where he's at, what he's capable of, or this girl over here. Oh, she can control minds. Let's keep an eye on that one, you know, just in case. Like, hopefully she's a hero. But in that case, you know, if, you know, Jean Grey shows up and, you know, takes over someone's mind, well, that could easily happen to anyone. We got to make sure that doesn't happen to everyone else.
Right. Even if I like how Marvel has like the SHIELD agency and has like the Avengers. Mm-hmm. So, and they kind of work together. So at least with the Avengers, it's a group of people that will keep people in check. You know what I mean? So even if someone else doesn't all register, at least there's like a powerful group to kind of be the watchman. But who knows?
And one of the reasons we should say why there is a system like this in the first place is that when superpowers quirks first started showing up in the My Hero world, it caused a war. It caused devastation. So after that happened, after All for One was forced away for a bit for taking advantage of the situation, they were able to say, okay, look, we need to register stuff. We need to make sure we can trust who's out there. Only people who are registered heroes can use their powers in public like this. I get that.
Yeah. I mean, And people don't like limitations. So I think about how with our church, and this is a very like small limitation, we took away all the pastor's credit cards and we gave them PEC cards. And what a PEC card is pretty much we now load your funds every single month. And guess what? If you don't use them all, we get to take 20% back pretty much and put it into a pretty much a rainy day account or like, you know, future building projects and stuff like that. Because obviously you didn't use it all, so you're not going to need it all. So it puts a cap on the pastors and campuses from doing needless spending. And so many people got so upset about it. Like, you're trying to control me. I feel like a child, have like a little cash card. And so no one likes restrictions. And I use that small scenario because it was just pastors with a credit card. That's not even their money. You know what I mean? It was the churches. And we got pushback from men of God. Imagine trying to put limitations on heroes that have superpowers. So there's going to be pushback. Yeah. There's going to be chaos. There's going to be vigilante groups because they don't want to conform to the system. Just kind of like how we have here. I mean, we've had civil wars, you know, not any crazy going on, but like we've had like riots and whatnot. So I can only imagine the chaos of trying to implement something going on. I even talked to someone. I was like, man, I really would love this calendar system, but no one's going to use it. And it's hard to implement everyone getting on board with calendaring at the church versus getting heroes to register. So it's just like, do you even try?
Yeah, I'm one of those people. For the most part, I follow the rules until they interfere with something that I'm attempting to do that's good. I would like to say most of the time I'm objectively right, but sometimes I've been proven wrong. Like, I will skirt the rules. I will tip over the line if it means getting something else done, that I don't have to send this file over there or what have you, if it means it gets done now. Mm-hmm. But that's not always the best way of doing things. So learning when to do that, when not to do that is an important part of growing up. And some people would argue you never do that. And I'm not one of those people. Mm-hmm. Moving on from there. Like we've mentioned a couple of times before, we have the introduction of our big bad for this series and All for One. How effective do you think that introduction is?
I mean, it's super effective because number one, we thought he was dead. We didn't know he was still around. So holy cow, this is the darkness and the shadow pulling the strings that we didn't even know with the whole, what are they called again? That group?
League of Villains.
Yeah. Why did I forget that for a second? But like this is a mastermind. And so we already knew the League of Villains was a threat. Like we understood that. But now we find out just how deep it goes and just how much of a threat they are because we see the ringleader. Plus, we thought Homdu was dead. What a shock. Like, could you imagine thinking you already gave up so much defeating someone just for them to be back?
Yeah. Now, granted, not nearly as good looking as the last time you fought them, but still pretty dang effective at what they're doing. And that All for One is a terrifying villain in a story built on the concept of you having superpowers. And there's one guy out there who can not only steal those powers, but then use them against you. That is terrifying. That is why certain things happen later on to kind of, shall we say, nerf him in certain respects. Because when you recognize how good of a villain that is, but they should be practically unstoppable in the fight. And it is at this point in time, he's not able to steal One for All because we learn later on, he actually gave One for All to his brother. And we'll get to that way later on. And that menace he brings, he just beats down on the heroes, brings the Nomus into the fight, rescues the League of Villains, even temporarily steals Bakugo, forcing All Might to face off against them. And like the insidiousness of how he just coldly brings up the fact that, yeah, by the way, you remember your mentor when she gave up her kid hoping he would have a regular life? Well, guess what? I stole her grandson and I'm molding him into my image. That is evil, villainous, and I love that introduction to him we get.
Guys, when we see that guy's backstory, that's one of the villain backstories I actually enjoyed.
Yes. There's a lot more coming up down the line when we have to discuss those arcs. I'm so ready for them. It's going to be a lot of fun. But for right here, just what we see of All for One is that menace, that calculating part of himself. He's not just... there's parts of him later on where he kind of becomes mustache twirling because he kind of likes it, but that's still effective regardless of that. That's a good villain. And not only that, he's the villain who causes your Superman of this world to lose his powers to the point where he's not able to use them really much outside of a couple seconds at a time. That changes the story forever because that means Deku needs to get his budding gear and master All for One, One for All, even faster.
And it really just it makes you lose your morale. Like just as a society as a whole, they watch their superhero die. Not die as hanging up the cloak.
As a
superhero, he died.
Well, speaking of what do you think the loss of All Might's powers was handled?
I love that it was done publicly because people just know. It's not going to be like, oh, whatever happened to All Might? Wait, did he just disappear? Does he not care? Is he retired on the beach somewhere? Because when you don't know, people start try to fill in the facts themselves with rumors, or they just don't know what to believe. So I like that it was done so publicly, and it gave people hope of good still defeated evil. Like we lost this battle, but the good still won the war. And we said earlier, it made it sound like he was calling up all the other heroes too. And so hopefully the number threes, fours, maybe even eights, they kind of I too can get to that level, instead of sometimes people just get so far out of reach. It's like, oh, I'll never reach that level. That's great for them. They wake up at 5 a.m. every morning. They work out. They're doing great. Good for them. I'll never be that. But now they hopefully will get encouraged. I can also pick up the mantle.
Yeah. Oh, well said. The fact that this was filmed in front of not only Japan, but the world. So they all see the symbol of peace losing his powers at the same time. And yet they cheer him on. Means a lot. Even though society, like you mentioned way earlier, they're starting to lose faith in heroes. There's that one moment they can all rally behind. This is a moment of great tragedy, but at the same time, they recognize what was done on their behalf. And for Deku especially, it's my mentor has lost his powers. I've inherited them. I've got to be the one to step up. And then you get to Bakugo, who blames himself for All Might losing his powers, as we'll see later on. And that's got to kill someone like him. Be like, am I that weak that I caused this to happen? And obviously that causes friction along the way between all of them. But because if this doesn't happen, those story threads don't come up. We don't have them growing as characters. So as much as I'm like, no, All Might, please don't lose your powers. Keep say here's the symbol of peace. It's better for the story overall that he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if there's nothing worse than having someone who always wins and is like, oh, I know how this battle is going to go. Kind of like Naruto. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we know he's going to win every single time.
After a certain part, yes, I definitely agree. In a series that I do love.
Yeah, I know. I love it too.
There's a lot of flaws.
It's like, and then he's like, oh, well, here we go again. He'll win.
And My Hero Academia will definitely have some flaws later on as later arcs, but I'll save those for another time.
Right. On those review episodes.
So one of the things kind of brought up in this arc is the idea of legacy and having someone that you pass things on to. We have Izuku and Shigaraki serving as foils to one another, and they're being mentored by All Might and All For One respectively, and how that affects them as people. Like, do you believe this is done well, and how does it affect the story?
Yeah, I feel like it's done well, especially because you get to see even past All Might, and like you see Gran Torino, and you get to see more of the previous wielders. So it just shows how legacy is generational, and how you're always wanting to. We see it too with all the other students going for their mentorship programs and whatnot, and learning from the people in the next season. It's so good to learn from someone in the season above you, and then hopefully you will then, down the road, train someone up in the season that you just came out of, you know? And so I think they do a really good job of preparing the next generation, because if you don't, I mean, you look at churches who do not invest in the youth. This is how you get really old churches. And so if these heroes aren't investing in the younger generation, especially like with Midoriya, you're just going to get a lot of old heroes that burn out and a lot of entitled young people who don't know what it takes to be a hero.
And the way it's played off of each other in Izuku and Shigaraki are like, you know, the light and dark aspects to this, and that one is being mentored into heroism, the other into villainy, both for very different reasons. All For One, it's because he wants someone to take over for him because he knows he's not going to be here forever. That the last fight he had with All Might before this proved that he could be beat. He could even potentially die one day. So he does it in such a twisted fashion, taking Nana's grandchild to become be molded and shaped into his image. The ultimate insult to the people who've been fighting him all this time, using the powers of One For All. Then you have Deku, who as a quirkless person was gifted with this power to protect other people, had that drive within himself to look after others. And the collision of the different ideologies between them is just incredibly well played. I love what the series does with that. And that's definitely something in the most recent chapters of the manga as they're releasing right now. This is still something being brought up. That's how important legacy is to this series as a whole.
I'm not caught up with the manga. I refuse to read it. I like it watching the animes.
That's fair. And I believe the 7th season is not too long out from right now. I want to say it's coming out in May.
Something like that. We just waiting.
Yeah. All right, cool. So with that in mind, do you have anything you want to add before we start wrapping things up?
Go watch My Hero Academia if you have not. All right. Hopefully, if you're listening to this episode, because this is what, like our 4th or 5th one review of the series, at least.
Probably more.
But go watch it. Honestly, rewatch. I kind of want to rewatch it now, chit-chatting about all this, because this is such a good arc.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. But guys, if you want to hear more, we are going to do a special bonus question, of course, for our Captivate and Patreon listeners. This is going to be like, if you had your own quirk, what would you name yourself and what would your quirk be? We're going to be doing this for our Patreon and Captivate listeners. But before we go there, rate and review this arc out of 10, what do you think?
It's just so hard because 10 is perfection where I can't love it anymore. So very few things get 10 for me. So I'll give it an 8.5.
Okay. Yeah. I really love this arc. It's like I said, it's not my favorite, but it's up there. I'm giving this one a 9. It's a solid, solid part of it. My Hero Academia bringing up very different aspects that have been building up to this moment in time. So much fun. But what do you guys think? Let us know on Facebook, Discord, YouTube, wherever you see this. Just what were your thoughts on the show so far? Is there something we missed? We really wish we would have talked about. How are we going to know if you don't tell us? So please also send us some episode topic ideas as well. We'd love that. We've got some in the works that have come from listener requests. So we're more than happy to do it if you send it our way. But also want to thank some patrons real quick. Russell Gentry, Justin Vaughn, Annette Noel, and Jeannie Mattingly. Guys, thank you very much for all that you do. But remember, we are all the chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hi, my name is TJ. I'm here to tell you about the Systematic Geekology Shop. That's where we post all of our merch. It is hosted on CreatorSpring, and we have a ton of really cool merch, mostly clothing. We have hats, extra soft t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, and more. Our hosts wear them all the time. It's actually super comfy. We have glassware, mugs, which everybody loves a good mug. Fill out your cupboard. Get rid of some old ones, which is the part that I never do. That's why I have too many cups. We have cloth bags, posters, and it's really stuff. We like to put our icons on there. We like to put quotes, things we come up with. And it's cool. It's a cool way. And a lot of it is pretty subtle, too, to show support for one of your favorite shows. And my personal favorite is actually our SG dad cap, which I've been reluctant to buy it because now I have to wear hats at work. And then I get tired of wearing hats, but it's really cool. It's really understated. It is our logo right here. And then it says Systematic Geekology on the back. It's great. It's a really good hat. We have a few of them floating around. Check it out. And if we could all just rock the SG dad cap in public, I think that'd be pretty sweet.
Hey friends and fellow geekologists, you're getting ready to hear one of the panels we hosted at Theology Beer Camp last October in Missouri. A huge thank you to Trip Fuller and Homebrew Christianity and the Venues Church for hosting us and allowing us to be a part of the Zest. We had so much fun, and it was so meaningful to be at the intersection of philosophy, theology, and pop culture with some amazing experts in those fields of discipline. We do have the dates for Theology Beer Camp 2024. It will be October 17th through 19th in Denver, Colorado. And this year, the title for Beer Camp is going to be The Return of the God Pods. You can follow God Pods 2024 on social media with any updates that they share with us. And tickets are on sale now. And so we hope to see you there in October.